This is the Day of Sobriety at Saturday Night Live, held at Episode Shopping Center, Room 120 in San Jose, California, on November 27th, 1992. This is the 4 p.m. meeting, and the main speaker for this meeting is Debbie H. from Long Beach. The original recording and its copy are at the SNL Tape Library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. And please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any AA member at the public level. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I am Debbie Harris, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
And I would like to thank Jim and the committee for inviting me to participate in your Day of Sobriety. I was here once before, and it was such a nice experience then, and it has been so far today. And also, I would like to give a wish of good luck to my best friend, Rita Beam, who's speaking at a 4 o'clock meeting in San Diego. She said if I mentioned her name, she'd mention mine. So that's done. There are three things about me that I like to tell you about first so I don't forget, but these are also the first three things I like to know about you, because in my life, these three things, with them all working in my life at the same time, my life is good. And I'm talking about good on the inside. The only time I get uncomfortable is when I start getting into self-will run riot and start trying to run my own life again. But for the most part of my sobriety, I live comfortably on the inside. And those three things are a sobriety date. And my sobriety date is February the 8th, 1976. That means I've been sober a little over 16 years. I don't say that to impress you, because there's lots of people in the room today that are sober longer than me. It just gives you a point of reference of what my experience has been. But it's not my first sobriety date. I've had a few before that. In fact, one of my sobriety dates was the same day as Larry's, on May 2nd of 1 year. And so before he got sober. But so I've had a few sobriety dates, so but this is my last one. And if you are new here today and don't have a sobriety date, I encourage you to get one. Alcoholics Anonymous will make a lot more sense when you're sober. And to me, sobriety is the absence of anything that alters my mood. It doesn't matter to me what form it comes in, but anything that alters me, because the last thing I ever took or had was one lousy joint. And that's what my sobriety day is based on. And so I hope you get one. And this is one thing in my life that is without question, that it is accurate. It is above reproach. I don't ever have to stand up and take a cake for a period of time and think to myself, which is the worst person to know, I wonder if I should have counted such and such. I've seen too many people stand here with those kinds of secrets, and either one day they either finally get honest or they drink out of guilt. And I don't live well with conflict of any sort, and I certainly don't want to be up here under false pretenses on my sobriety date. The second and third thing to me are equally important. I just can't say them at the same time, and that is a home group. I, too, am a member of the Bellflower Big Book group, and I have been for six years when I moved out here. And prior to that, I was a member of the Skyland group in Atlanta, Georgia, for almost seven. And my original home group was the 12 and 12 group in Minneapolis, and I was there for almost 4 years. And I believe in a home group, not certainly for the group's benefit, but for mine, because I am a person who finds it very easy to isolate and be by myself, and this forces me to be with people on a regular, consistent basis. It's always to my benefit for me to get to know people and to keep that identification for me going on. I always like to have a little job at my meeting, and that's been important, because there's been many times when, because I've had a commitment there and I've learned about commitment here and to be accountable and responsible for doing what I say I'm going to do, it has gotten me to many meetings that I didn't feel like going to. I believe in a home group, and my home group, I can go to lots of meetings a week, but I only have one home group, and that home group gets more of everything of me, more of my time and my energy and my money and my involvement. They get more of everything of me, and that is where I put my energy. And the third thing is a sponsor. I, at 16 years sober, wouldn't dream of being without a sponsor today. I need and want someone out there who's lived where I'm about to live and has lived and gotten out of the trenches to tell the tale. Because for my first 3 years, I think because I stuck very close to the old-timers of our fellowship that I didn't have an official sponsor. Now, I say that way because I would ask people, I heard about sponsorship, but not really clear. And in our area now today, there's a lot of strong encouragement for sponsorship. And I'm sure there was where I lived. I just don't recall it as heavy. And I would ask people who were maybe 6 months sober longer than me or someone who was a friend. And in my case, that didn't work. I do need somebody who's been out there a number of years longer than me. In my first 3 years, I kind of just, didn't seem to be very serious. But one more time, when I got an official sponsor and someone who was sober much longer than me, and was showing me this as a way of life, one more time, because I did what you suggested I do and what you did, I began to feel more a part of. My roots went a little bit deeper every time I've done what you've suggested I do. And so those three things, and I've had three sponsors in sobriety because I believe in local sponsorship. That's the only reason I've changed sponsors, and I feel very, very fortunate for that too. I with those three things in mind, a sobriety date, a home group, and a sponsor, if you don't have one or all of those three things, I encourage you to get them, because when you get them, I guarantee you this, your life will change. If you don't like the way you've been living and you don't have one of these things in your life, get them. Otherwise, stay the way, living the way you are. Because I don't like living uncomfortably. And I know what my thinking, where my thinking gets me. I know where my solutions have gotten me. And it's never been where I've been through Alcoholics Anonymous. I have never come up with these kinds of solutions, making amends, being kind to people. No. I think about homicide and revenge. And those are not things that will keep me sober, but the other things will. My first drink was the same night as my first drunk. If I drank before that, I don't remember it. But it would be a night that would change my life. Now, it would be, I took my first drink, I was 12 years old, and it was a Friday the 13th. Fridays have always seemed to be good. Lots of things have happened to me on Fridays. They haven't always been good, but lots of things have happened to me on Fridays. And it would be April of 1970. Now, that makes me 35 years old today, so we'll get the numbers out of the way there. I had my first drink at that time. Now, the person that took that first drink didn't seem to have any unusual problems. I was not a victim of anything. My parents were kind and loving and cared about me, provided me with a nice home. I did not want for anything. I had never been abused mentally, physically, emotionally. I mean, I was raised in a Catholic school. My first 5 years, I was raised in the Catholic Church. I was an only child. I was spoiled, rotten, selfish, self-centered from the gate. There was no reason, as a friend of mine clearly says, if my environment would have predicted whether or not I'd be an alcoholic, I would not be an alcoholic. And I have, to my knowledge, it has not been discovered any alcoholics in my family, whether from my aunts or uncles or parents or grandparents or anywhere down the line. We cannot determine where the alcoholics are. So if it's hereditary, I have a very weak case of it. I don't know where it came from, but the important thing is I know that I have it. And that's all that really matters to me, is that I never forget that that's what I have. I was invited to this party, and I heard them talking about drinking. And, of course, I didn't know why everybody looked forward to the weekends, but I was soon to find out. But you see, I didn't know that my drinking would be different from theirs, because it always would appear to me the same. But they had talked about drinking. I didn't hear them talk about getting drunk, but just drinking. But for some reason in my mind, I had decided that I'm going to get drunk. Now, it was like my debut. And I had one shot at being a part of this group. Now, some people are attracted to those academically inclined, some athletically inclined, and I was attracted to the people who drank and took drugs and got in trouble. And those are the people who invited me to come over to that party. And now, I don't know where I got getting drunk, because I had never seen my parents drunk. I still haven't seen them drunk to this day. But the way I saw people drink was my parents, and I would never drink like they did. They were the kind of drinking that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is called social drinking. I have never drank that way, would not want to drink that way. But that's the way they drank. And what they would do is they would have company over, and so they needed a reason to drink. And they would take down that dusty whiskey bottle that God knows how long had been up there. They'd pour their guests a drink, one, put in ice and mix and foo-foo and whatever they else put in there, recap it and shelve it for another undetermined amount of time, because that was it for the night. They would drink that drink, and they would have dinner, and they'd play cards, and then they'd have coffee and sandwiches because they're driving home, you know, that kind of stuff. Something foreign to people like us. And that was the way they drank. And I never saw anybody flying through the room, or I never saw furniture going through the wall, or somebody's fist, or anybody dancing on the table with a lampshade. I never saw any of that kind of stuff, of drunken brawls breaking out. That was not how they drank. And yet, what would be as natural to them as that, to me in a very short period of time, would be as natural to me as that I took that fresh whiskey bottle, uncapped it, threw the cap away because I'll never need it again. I know that I'm going to drink that bottle as fast as I can, because that's the way I drink. And you see, drinking that one drink with ice and mix and all that kind of nonsense in it, you know, I've never drank like that. I'd be embarrassed to drink like that. You know, any self-respecting alcoholic would. And so that was the way that I saw people, but this would be so natural to me. Now, I arrived at that party at 6 o'clock, and it would determine the pattern of my drinking for the next 6 years. I arrived early, and I would always want to start drinking as early as possible. I had no idea that when I walked into that room, it would be as if I went into another room, and I never did, nor have I returned to the room I left. Because you see, when I took that first drink, my life would change, and I didn't realize it at the time what and how quickly it would change. But secondly, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, it would change again, and it never was the way it had been once before. Thank God. Thank God I had another opportunity to start over and to live a life I didn't even know existed, let alone would be the only way I want to live today. But I arrived at 6 o'clock, and I would always get there early. And we started to drink. And for it would never make a difference to me whether it was liquor or beer or mixed or straight out of a bottle or on ice. I would eventually have my favorites. But this particular night, it wouldn't make any difference. I was so excited and couldn't wait to get started. And I don't, you know, when you're 12 and 13 years old and you all get together, it's kind of like a liquid potluck. You bring whatever you stole or found, and you mix it all together and you start passing it around. And that's what we did. And when I took that first drink, it burned, and I thought, that's good. That means it's working. You know, that was a good sign. And it went down, and when it hit, it just, something happened there. I didn't know I'd had a gut full of hot rocks until I started to hear him cool down. And I didn't know I had a gut full of knots until they started to kind of unwind themselves and loosen themselves up. It was when I took the second drink that I know that I changed, or my being changed from drinking to be accepted to drinking for the effect. I never did drink to be accepted or a part of from that time on. I drank from the second drink on for the effect. Because what happens, I took that second drink down, and that's when the change took over. Because I had arrived at that party that night very scared and nervous, and I hope I'll be okay, and I hope my hair is all right, and I hope I don't say something stupid, and I hope I'll be accepted by these people. And I'm nervous, and I'll tell you, after that second drink, you sort of throw your shoulders back, put your head up, and think, aren't they glad I'm here? It's just such a change in how I began to look at you and how I felt about me. And Clancy described that so perfectly the first time I ever heard him say it. It described me to a T. What happens when I take a drink is I have an instant change of perception. That's exactly what happened. But see, I did not know that the room did not have this change of perception. I assumed they did since I was having it. They must be having it. Now I know why they look forward to the weekends all the time. Now I know why they drink, and yet I would be the only little kid that got drunk that night. I'd be the only one who passed out, who blacked out. I came 2-3 hours after my first drink. They had drugged me home from the party. I came to with my first case of the dry heaves, and I wanted to go back to the party because, God, I'd had a good time. Now, who knows what all happened? Didn't really make any difference, but I'd gotten drunk that night. And they wouldn't take me back to the party, but from that point on, that was the point of every day, or certainly every time I got an opportunity to drink. I couldn't wait for the next time. And the next morning is Saturday morning, and my awakening thoughts are how to get some more for tonight. From that morning until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I do not ever remember giving a second thought to anything I did or felt or would think or do regarding my drinking and alcoholism. I don't ever remember thinking to myself, I wonder if my friends are doing this. I wonder if so-and-so is thinking this way. It was so instinctive and natural to me. It just was as natural as breathing. And a few girlfriends and I did get a few cases of beer that night and immediately got caught. And my solution was quite different. Most of those 12-year-old kids would probably think, like, well, you know, I am kind of young. Maybe I should wait till I'm of legal age to drink. That was not my solution. I'm here to tell you I've never had a legal drink of alcohol because every time I got there, they changed the age. And so I've never had a legal drink of alcohol. Don't want to change my sobriety date to include that, but that was not my solution. My solution was I'm just going to have to learn how to lie better and find a better hiding place. And those were my solutions, and if I keep those in mind, that's why my way never did work. It just never worked. Your way does. The way of my sponsor does. But my way, one more time, that was my solution. Well, my drinking at that time became weekends, and at every given opportunity, I couldn't wait for the next time and lived from the last time. It just was a constant thing in the front of my mind. I look back at how very quickly my attitude changed. Of it had been important to me at one time that I was a good student, that I did obey, that I was a good daughter, that I respected my elders, that I was home on time, that I did what I said I was going to do, that I was nice to people. All of that stuff became, who cares? Leave me alone. Just get out of my life. Just get off my back. Just, so what? A terrible, terrible attitude just was so natural and quickly in coming to me. About a year after I was first had my first drink, I was introduced to the wonderful world of drugs, which allowed me to stay conscious longer before the inevitable blackout. Because I'm a blackout drinker. I don't know about most people, but I am, because I like to drink whiskey out of a bottle with a beer chaser. And I blacked out a little too quickly. I wanted to be in the middle of life, not sleeping through it. And I found that things that kept me up, things like speed and things like acid, would do the trick. And so that would be my favorite combination. The last year and a half that I drank, my kind of diet that I would shoot for on a daily basis was a bottle of whiskey and a hit or two of acid. And that was the way I wanted to live. And I didn't think anything unusual about that. That was okay with me. And so 5 years and 3 weeks after my first drink, on May 2nd, 1975, on a Friday, I was put into a hospital for alcoholism and drug addiction in Grand Forks, North Dakota. My father, I was 17 years old at this time. He had sought professional advice. He had tried everything that an unknowledgeable man could try to help his daughter. He was tired and just distraught seeing what I was doing to myself. And he sought professional advice, and the professional told him to commit me to a hospital, and that's what he did. And I would stay in this particular hospital for 7 weeks. I would learn a lot of information about alcoholism, a lot of language. Larry talked about language earlier, completely foreign. I just didn't understand a lot of things they were talking about. But on Fridays, we would be taken to outside meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, of course, since I'm not an alcoholic, there was no need to sit up front. So I sat in the farthest back corner of the room I could find. But apparently, unbeknownst to me, I began, as they told me, try to find the similarities. Naturally, I'm going to find the differences. And what happened is that every now and then I apparently tuned into the people who were doing what I'm doing today, sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And this, I believe, for me, was the beginning of the end, because up here I was rationalizing why my case was different. But inside, I knew in my own small way I could identify with what they were talking about. They would say things like they had lost their family because of drinking. And I thought to myself, hey, I wanted to lose my family. You know, I wanted to get them out of my life. They were in the way and they were on my back, and I wanted to get rid of them. And yet I knew that my drinking had been a tremendous problem and cause of a lot of arguments in that home, that it was a mutual agreement that because I cannot live the way they want me to live and I don't want to live the way they want me to live, that I need to leave. But in my head, it was because I wanted them out of my life. C'est la vie. They talked about wrecking cars, totaling out cars. And I thought, I've never totaled out a car, not officially. I have never totaled out a car. Now, I had a little drunk car that arrived at Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, the kind that start off square and they kind of get rounded out with little drunk bumps and everything, but never had totaled out a car. That was the big difference. They talked about DUIs and drunk driving charges, 502s, whatever you want to call them, and I thought, I've never had any of those. And the reason I didn't is because I worked for the city judge. And I knew all the cops. And so when they would stop me for drunk driving, they would take my booze away and tell me, Deb, just go home, okay? And send me on my way. And that's why I didn't have any 502 charges. They talked about jails and prisons and institutions. And I mean, my God, I mean, there were some serious criminals in here. You know, I mean, people like Johnny and Larry and, you know, serious people here. And I thought, you know, that doesn't apply to me. I've only been in a jail 3 times, and every time it was a misunderstanding. And so that didn't apply. They talked about losing jobs. And it took me a while to remember that I had been fired from a couple jobs. I always seemed to have some little job. I had been asked to quit from a few jobs for some very embarrassing behavior. But my problem was that I usually would quit in a blackout. Of course, then I didn't know I had quit, so I would show up the next day just like nothing had happened, and those are very awkward. I'm not quick on my feet, so it's pretty embarrassing. So these are the kinds of things that I would find the differences of, yet in my own small way was beginning to identify with. There were two things, though, that they talked about that I couldn't rationalize away, and one of them was they talked about all those broken promises. And the face of my father was the first thing that came to mind. It had certainly gotten to the point for the past year that I did not make any promises to him or anybody else because I knew I was incapable of keeping them regardless of how much I meant them. I just knew I couldn't do it. He would say to me, and this is why I know I'm an alcoholic and he isn't. This is why I know that you can't drink enough whiskey to become an alcoholic if you aren't. Because, you see, he would say to me one time, why do you always have to get drunk? Why can't you just, you know, have one or two? Why can't you drink like me? And you see, I told him the most honest answer there was and didn't know it. I told him, I don't know. I don't know. I didn't know anything about what this was, that why I couldn't have one or two. It never one time has occurred to me have one or two. But I don't, you see, when he takes a drink, he doesn't feel better. When I take a drink, I do. My life changes, my attitude, my spirit changes when I take a drink. It's when I don't have anything to drink and I'm in this non-drinking or sober period of time that I start getting very restless, irritable, and discontent, and I cannot stand where I am. I cannot stand how I feel. I don't like anything. I don't seem to have fun. Nothing is worthwhile. I don't like you. I don't like anything. This is when I think about homicide, how to permanently get rid of my stepmother, and I don't give her a second thought when I take a drink. And yet, that doesn't have the same effect on him it does on me. And I began to realize to know that all those broken promises are things that just always did eat away at my heart. And the other thing they talked about, and I really don't hear it that much anymore, Dossie mentioned a little bit this morning or this afternoon, and I think this probably frightened me more than anything. They talked about trying to scrub away the smell. And I remember how many times I had tried to scrub away the smell. And I didn't know what the smell was. I know I'm naive. I was then, am today, will be forever. But I did not know that the smell was booze coming through my pores. I couldn't get rid of it. I'd puff and powder and perfume, and it was always still there. And I didn't understand. And these people were talking about that. And they said it was booze coming through their pores. And that probably the thing that frightened me made it all seem real. And this is the gift that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. When we talk about stuff, we know they know. And I knew that they knew what that smell smelled like. And they said it was alcohol coming through their pores. And they said they were alcoholics and that they don't drink. And God, if I identify, that means that I may be an alcoholic and that I'm not gonna be able to drink forever either. And at 17, forever is a very long time. I didn't hear one day at a time. I thought forever. And this was probably the thing that frightened me the most. It didn't keep me from taking a drink again, but it would always be there in my mind. Larry said it today, you may leave us, but we will never leave you. And that's exactly the way it was for me. I would be sent to an all-women's halfway house on Friday in June of 1975, one more Friday event, and would be there a total of 9 months. The first 7 months, though, I did exactly the minimum of what I had to do, which was not drink or take any drugs. Okay, I can do that. And I have to go to at least one Alcoholics Anonymous meeting a month. I can do that too, okay? And so I did not drink or take any drugs, and I went to one AA meeting a month, whether I needed it or not. And I got that little piece of paper signed. I was just too stupid to go to the movies and sign it myself, you know, so I'd go to these meetings. And I didn't change. I didn't feel any different. What's the big deal about not drinking? I don't really like it myself. No wonder, you know, it's not amazing why I didn't enjoy being sober. I mean, what was I doing? I was doing nothing. That was the whole point. You see, I learned from this period of time that just not drinking and it's showing up in a meeting now and then is not my solution. Because, you see, when I do that, I will end up drinking again. Because I didn't change anything. I didn't change the way I looked or talked or acted or behaved. I kept every old phone number from before very fresh and current because I knew I'd be back drinking with them one day. I just didn't know when or where. And after 7 months of sobriety for the Christmas and New Year's holidays, I came to San Jose to visit my mother. And this was in 1975. And the first week I was out here, I was absolutely miserable because naturally I'm going to hang around the people that I had drank with and used with before. Why would I call Alcoholics Anonymous? The second week and a half I was here, I was drunk. But I just stayed drunk because I couldn't stand the way I was feeling. I had finally had enough, And I went to where I was going to get relief, the only place I knew I had gotten it before, but there was something wrong here. I wasn't getting the feeling I had before. It wasn't the relief it had once been. There's something wrong here because I'm doing the same kinds of combinations of alcohol and drugs I had done before, and it's not working. It must be California. It must just be the stuff out here. If only I was with my old friends, if only I was where I used to drink, it'd be different. But there was that part of me who'd been to too many AA meetings, and I knew there weren't any if onlys. It would be no different anywhere I went. And I remember being face down on the floor, unable to move because I am so drunk and I can't talk and I can't do anything, but I am drunk up to my eyeballs. It's from here on up that I'm very clear. And I'm thinking about those AA slogans and I'm thinking about those things that they had talked to me about. It's the first drink that gets you drunk and the inability to predict my behavior, the inability to control my drinking and all these symptoms that I knew had been there from the first time I took a drink. Yet was unable to admit. I was getting closer. I'm not quite there, but I'm getting closer that maybe I have maybe I might be an alcoholic. But to me, there was still time left. I was still having fun. I returned to Minnesota, and I stepped my meetings up from one a month to one a week. When you're running your own life, one meeting a week sounds like a lot of meetings to me. And I didn't do anything, didn't get a sponsor, didn't change anything else. And finally, on a Friday, I got a letter in the mail from one of these friends in California that had one joint in it. And like any still uncommitted alcoholic, I decided to keep it, you know, just in case I might need it someday. I just didn't know it'd be the next day. And, of course, there wasn't anything else on my mind but this one joint. So I thought about that all night long, woke up thinking about it, and that was the 7th of February, and I take my sobriety date on the 8th, my first sober day. And whatever your February 7th is my favorite day in your life, because I don't know how you ever know when you're going to get the gift of sobriety. It doesn't last unless I pick up the spiritual kit of tools, but I would not have picked that day. I'd have picked something easier to remember or something rhymed or whatever. It wasn't my day to pick, though. I didn't know that by the end of that day I would be just done. It's obviously one lousy joint was not the worst I had ever had or the highest I'd ever gotten, but it did exactly what nobody and nothing had been able to do before. It got me off the ground where I was no longer 100% in control of reality, but not enough to kill all the thoughts and the feelings and the guilt and the feeling that was happening inside. And I had just had enough of me. Me and my way and my decisions and my solutions, all of which were of no value, of no use, and poor judgment. All self-centered and selfish to the end. And I was just sick and tired of me. And it just made me surrender for the first time. I finally became willing to do and to go to any lengths. And I had never been there before. I thought I had, but I surrendered for the first time. And I went, the next day I went to the old timers of Alcoholics Anonymous. To me at that time, an old timer is anybody who'd been sober longer than I'd been alive. And at 18 years old, there was an awful lot of them. At 35, there's still quite a few, but they're thinning out a little bit. But I went to the old timers, and I've always surrounded myself from that, all of my sobriety around the old timers. I said, what do you do? How do you stay sober? How do you live this way? And the answer then was the same answer in 1935 as it is today in 1992. First of all, we don't drink or take anything mood-altering. We're regulars in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. We study the book. We take the steps. We carry this message to others, and we get a God of our understanding. And those have been the things that have always been at the top of the list on an attainable thing. But I'll be the first to tell you, they have not always, with the exception of I have always gone to meetings and I have always stayed sober, been something that I've accomplished with stars. I was 18 when I got sober, and I had a lot of living in front of me, a lot of things I had never experienced, and a lot of living to do. I do to this moment. I have no regrets of anything I have ever done. I have made amends to where all have been needed to be made. I am current. I am comfortable on the inside and comfortable and at peace with myself and the people around me. I started living life, and I was active in Alcoholics Anonymous and in living, you know, and I am very grateful that I have a way of life that allows me to correct my mistakes, to learn from them, to make amends, to take inventory, to live and to become what I want to be. The men and women that I've had as the sponsors in my life, I've had two women and one man as my sponsor in my sobriety, all had many things in common, but the one thing they all had in common was that they are people I want to be like when I grow up, because they wore Alcoholics Anonymous so well. They wore it with dignity, and they wore it with pride. And that was the way I wanted to be and still want to be like when I grow up. I have wonderful examples in my life. My first 4 years were very active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in meetings every night. I was active in service. At 3 years, I got my first sponsor, as I mentioned before. And just shy of 4 years, I moved to Atlanta. And I'd be there almost 7 years. And it would be different. It was almost like I've had three phases of sobriety for me. When I arrived in Atlanta, I decided that, you know, since I'm new here, I think, you know, I'll go like two or three meetings a week, just, you know, kind of get myself acclimated here, because I don't know how they do things, and they don't care how they did it wherever I came from, and I just need to learn, adjust myself to their way here. And what happens is I decided two or three meetings. Well, two or three meetings becomes two. I mean, I never make it four. If I'm picking the numbers, I'm going to go what seems to be the easier, softer way. Now, that is not the solution when you're new in an area. The solution is you should go to more meetings. But I decided two meetings a week, and my home sponsor's home group became my home group. I chose that. And so what happened over a period of 2 years, when I was 6 years sober, my life on the inside was very, very empty. It was dull. I was becoming restless, irritable, and discontent. I was not very comfortable. It was very lackluster. Very, is this all there is? Very complacent. And I did not realize it because it happens ever so gradually, but I'll tell you what happened in a nutshell. When I lived in Minneapolis and I was 4 years sober, at my home group I used to arrive an hour before the meeting. Now, that's not every meeting I go to, but my home group meeting I like to arrive an hour before and still do. And I would get there and because the meeting before the meeting is always fun. And now I find at my home group meeting, 2 years later, I'm arriving about 5 minutes before the meeting, walking in, getting my coffee, and going to my chair. And if by chance there's a newcomer on my way to my seat, I'll shake their hand. After the meeting, when I was 4 years sober, I used to be one of the last people to leave, and still am today many times. And because the meeting after the meeting is fun. And now, 2 years later, at 6 years sobriety, I find after the meeting, it's sort of like, amen, shake, shake. Okay, see y'all next week. Bye. And you see taillights. And I'm wondering why I'm feeling restless, irritable, and discontent. I don't realize it, but I've started to treat Alcoholics Anonymous about as with as much enthusiasm and vigor as a cooking class. I mean, it's sort of like punch in, punch out. You know, got that done. And that was about as much as I was giving it emotionally and mentally and spiritually. I was very lazy. I had gotten very complacent. And I didn't like the feelings. We're talking about my life here. And I'm treating it like a class. Well, 3 weeks after my sixth birthday on a Friday night, I thought I found the answer to why I was feeling restless, irritable, and discontent. And I met a little fella. And now, the reason I share this particular year is because, number one, it was the worst year of my sobriety emotionally to date. I don't ever want to repeat or go through this again. And I have seen many other people have this thing called obsession. And I've seen it, whether it be a man or a woman or your parents or your children or your job or your car or your whatever, obsession was so overpowering to me, very blinding. I also saw that in my particular case, the same kind of personality began as had been 7 years prior regarding alcohol and drugs. My life revolved the who, what, when, where, and why of it around alcohol and drugs. And now it would begin to revolve around a human being. And that is not the way that I want to live. Yet that was the way I volunteered to live. Nobody put me in that position. Nobody ever put a gun to my head and made me take a drink. And nobody made me live like that except me. I don't know if we take hostages, but what happened is I volunteered to be one. I met this little fellow and I thought, hey, it's a Friday night, that's an omen. He's single, that's real good news. He's got a lot of money, that's better news. And gee, isn't this something? Now, he's 13 years sober. He hadn't been to a meeting in 3 years, but no problem. I help him. I set out to help this little fellow, whether he wanted it or not, and he didn't. And it was during this next period of time, these 3 months period of time, that it was as if the light switch of insanity had been turned on inside of me. Because I thought about a lot of destructive things during this period of time because I wasn't getting what I wanted. I thought about suicide, temporary suicide, of course, nothing permanent. I thought about running my car into those bridges on the freeway or the guardrails or getting drunk at him as if any of these things were going to get his attention. Yet they were. That's a very sick way to try to get somebody's attention. I just could not seem to let go. I told God exactly what I wanted God to do, and he wasn't hopping to and doing what I had informed him to do. The one thing that I did not do, I was about willing to sell out in every area of my life and settle for about eighth best. But I had about a half ounce of sanity left, and I knew I didn't want to get drunk. And I knew that would be inevitable. And I knew that I can't stop going to meetings. Now, I was certainly no model member of Alcoholics Anonymous during this time. And I'll be the first to point that out. I'd walk in crying. I'd leave crying. Do not offer me the solution. Thank you. I liked the problem. I liked that self-pity. I had it strapped on tightly. I just was crazed inside and couldn't seem to cut it loose. Would think I had and didn't. I knew what happened time and time again. I never quit going to meetings, but I certainly was only there physically. I wasn't there in any magnanimous way, whatever. And finally, after 3 months of this whirlwind romance of which I was the only one involved, God finally put a roadblock in front of me that I acknowledged, and the guy got married to somebody else. But I was a good sport. I let him go and seemed to just go around the block, and bingo, there was another one, very similar in qualifications, and went through this whole routine one more time, and 3 months later I married him off to somebody else too. It was not a good year for relationships for me, and mainly my own relationship with myself and God was the one who really suffered. And I had had enough of my own action one more time. I was just sick and tired of the way I was living, and I surrendered one more time. I was at a fork in the road, and the fork was either you get sober and get into Alcoholics Anonymous full commitment, or you're out and you drink. It really just didn't seem to be any other way. And I knew I wanted to be sober a lot more than I wanted to be drunk, and I committed myself all over again to Alcoholics Anonymous. About 2 weeks later, I was at a convention, and on Friday night, I heard the speaker talk about in his drinking years that he realized that people, places, and things don't make me happy. And I'm almost 7 years sober, and that is applicable right now. My God, that's exactly what I was going after. I altered the words to fit me more appropriately to be men, money, and mansions don't make me happy. But the point was the same. I was after these things to abuse them and use them. And that's why they were not put in my life, because I knew I would end up drunk over them too. And the Saturday night, I heard that if you have some family business to take care of, you better do it before they die, and you say you wish you would have. And I wasn't ready for that, because what happened is the skeleton of my stepmother came to mind. And I knew now was the time to make amends. I knew someday I'll make them. I didn't know when, but when he said that, I knew now was the time. And I went back to Atlanta with a different feel and a different spirit, and I went through the steps with my sponsor as if I had never taken them before. They all looked so different. They all felt so different. It was the last inventory I made to date, and I made my amends. They're current then and now. And I felt so good about that. It was like I was living on that pink cloud again we talk about when we first get sober. I mean, I don't know if I've really ever been off it all that long, because I feel good in Alcoholics Anonymous the majority of the time. And I'm 8.5 years sober, and for some reason it's sort of like, why can't I always stay enthusiastic? Why does it seem to come and go? Why can't I just always be energized? And, you know, I'm so grateful, because, you know, I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous courtesy and consideration. And I'm so glad that I didn't stop and get up and get a cup of coffee, or somebody stumble over me to go to the bathroom or tell me about their hot date last night. Because if I would have missed this, I believe you'd have a different talker here. Because, you see, I don't ever want to be responsible for somebody else missing out on what they need to hear that might save their life, and this saved my life. I don't mean to make that sound big and dramatic and wooey, but it has never left the forefront of my mind. This guy was talking about being sober a number of years and feeling restless, irritable, and discontent, and why can't he always have that feeling? And he said he began to realize he was trying to live today in last year's program. And that was all I heard that night, and I began, my God, that's exactly what I've been doing. I've been living in today what I did a year and a half ago. It doesn't work. It's like, this is Saturday night. It's like trying to stay full on Tuesday's breakfast. I'm hungry by noon on Tuesday, let alone trying to hold out till Saturday night. And yet that's what I was doing in a way of life that asks me to just live for today. And I'm putting stuff off and sloughing stuff off. This is the day that I have to participate. This is the day that I show up and make a contribution in life and in sobriety. This is the day that I have. There aren't any badges or medals in Alcoholics Anonymous that I can polish up at night and then pat them on and say, now, this is when I took my inventory, and then, oh yeah, over here is that amend I made. There aren't any badges and medals of Alcoholics Anonymous, at least not in the material sense. Because I'll tell you, there are badges and medals of Alcoholics Anonymous, and where I have found them has been in the eyes of the old-timers. Where I do believe the eyes are the window of the soul. And I, 16 years ago, went to the old-timers, and I looked in their eyes, and I saw things in them that were elusive to me. They had a peace about them that I was I knew it was not chemically induced. They were standing still in their own skin, and I didn't know how you did that. And they had a feel about them, and that to me was God. And I wanted some of all of that. I wanted what they had. And what they did was they did Alcoholics Anonymous. They took these steps, they lived the traditions, and they lived this in all of their days, their affairs, day by day. It's inclusive and available to everyone. As long as I do what's asked of me here, I take these steps and practice these principles in all my affairs, it is there for and available for me too. For allowing me to participate in your day of sobriety and making a contribution in my sobriety, I thank you.